Why did you learn that phrase?
Okey-dokey.
Why did you learn that phrase? She could say it to Joe.
Yeah, that's right. I was just going, I was on a
Good morning. We will bring the June 15th, 2022 Board of Directors meeting of the Eastern Municipal Water District to order. I am going to ask Director Slauson, would you like to lead us this morning in our Pledge of Allegiance? If we could all stand.
Stand and repeat after me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
May I ask our board secretary to call the roll and to give instructions on those participating virtually in our meeting this morning.
Yes. Director Corona?
Here.
Director Slauson?
Here.
Director Armstrong?
Here.
Director Record?
Here.
And President Pauly is here, as well as our legal counsel. I will review the EMWD guidelines for virtual participation in EMWD board meetings. To avoid acoustic feedback, please mute all your devices during the meeting unless you are speaking. Before speaking, please unmute your device and turn down the volume of any other devices that are near you and tuned into the meeting. If you have joined by phone and would like to comment on an item, please press star 9 to let our staff know and wait to be notified. When it is your turn to speak, you will hear a notification asking you to unmute your phone by pressing star 6. If you have joined by computer, you may use the chat feature in Zoom to indicate your desire to speak. When done speaking, please mute your device again. Please participate from a quiet environment so that the board can hear you when you are speaking. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you very much. First on our agenda this morning are do we have anybody, April, wishing to do general public comment? I do understand there are many people in our audience today that are here for our second public hearing for the day, but do we have anyone doing any general public comment that have filled out a card?
I'm not aware of any general comments.
Very good. Okay. And again, I understand many people are here for our second public hearing for the day, and that will come up after our first public hearing this morning. So we will start off with a public hearing to approve and adopt a proposed resolution amending the administrative code as it relates to consolidated schedules of rates, fees, and charges for recycled water for the calendar year 2023. This is the time and place for the public hearing, which we held in conformance with the public participation requirements detailed in Article Number 13D of Proposition 218. I declare the public hearing open, and I'd like to ask staff if they would give us a report. Mr. Adams.
Yes, good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. This morning's public hearing is to adopt new revised recycled water rates for calendar year 2023. I'm very excited to make the final presentation to you for your consideration. As you're aware, staff has been working on this over the past 9 months with the planning committee and our outside consultant, Corollo Engineers. Joining us remotely this morning is Alex Bugsby and Michael Colantuno. Should the board have any questions at the end of my presentation. So let me go to the first slide. So just briefly, many of these topics were discussed at prior board meetings or workshops with the planning committee. I just plan to briefly discuss each one of them. So quickly on background, as the board is aware, back in 2020 and 21, the recycled water rates were increased on average 7% per year. That was a 5% related to costs and then 2% to cover other obligations. Last year, as part of the budget process, staff recommended a 5.8% increase, 3.8% based on cost increase, and then 2% based on the other obligations. During those budget deliberations with the board and discussions, the board actually adopted rates for recycled water at 1.8%, which was very similar to the potable water rates, and 5.8% in 2023, and that's what we're here today to amend. Part of that approval also directed staff to perform a comprehensive rate study, which had not been done prior on the recycled water system. So last September, staff engaged Corollo Engineers to start that water rate study. We had several meetings with the planning committee during that process and then made several presentations to the board, both in March and April, at this public hearing. The primary goals for the study were to promote financial resiliency for the recycled water system, ensure rate affordability for our customers, specifically ag, as they are two-thirds of our sales, protect and maintain the sustainability of our groundwater system, and to also ensure legal compliance. So our rate study was a little unique in that Corolla completed a market analysis. We do not consider this a cost of service study. This is a rate study, and recycled water has a lot more flexibility than potable water. And so a comprehensive market analysis was completed by Corolla, really to look at the costs related to alternative sources for ag, also to see the affordability related to ag and the profitability for various crops. So just to give a basis for the board and for the public, EMWD sold approximately 34,000 acre feet last year. As you can see in that graph, the bar graph to the left, ag, and this is non-demand ag, was almost 20,000 of that 34,000 acre feet. Collectively, ag represents over two-thirds of the sales of recycled water. To the right, you see we have about 77 customers or accounts for ag. The largest category is M&I at 488, and we have a total of 644 accounts. Within M&I, our largest customer is Valleywide Recreation and represents actually 25% of those sales. Interesting, over the past decade, Valleywide has increased the recycled water threefold, going from about 400 acre feet up to over 1,200 acre feet annually, as we have seen growth in our district and parks being added and recreation facilities added. So the goal of the recycled water rate study is to maximize beneficial use of recycled water to avoid discharge and to also maximize revenues to support the system. The market analysis really did help us understand affordability for ag and the costs that they incur related to their crops. The study did analyze alternative costs for the ag customer to pump groundwater. Corolla also performed analysis using the UC Davis studies on how water costs could impact ag users to ensure that their rates are reasonable and can provide profit for them in their production of crops. So this graph just shows really two things. One, that you can see in the green that that's mostly where our non-demand ag is as far as what they pay per acre foot. The purple line is what they would pay or what their alternative cost would be if they were pumping their own groundwater at 500 TDH. That's the upper limit. And then the blue line, which is the cost per pumping at 300 TDH. You can certainly see that most of the non-demand ag customers are paying within that range. And so recycled water is a good alternative for their costs related to groundwater pumping. So it makes it reasonable for them to continue to use recycled water. So the main takeaways of the market analysis was one, that those costs for recycled water is very comparable to what it would cost if they had alternative sources. And this doesn't include capital costs or replacement or rehabs. So certainly you can see at 300 TDH, 134 would be what the average cost on O&M and electricity would be, and then 208 at 500. So based on that and then the analysis on the studies, certainly ag rates are within reason to continue that high usage. So moving on to revenue requirements, in the study we did model several scenarios, including various costs, including and excluding various costs. Ultimately, the model that we modeled included capital, debt service, and other fixed asset costs. It did not include G&A, which will be funded from non-rate revenue. As shown on the bar graph, the projection for the next 5 years required 3% revenue requirement as for the next 5 years. And so that would be the increase in rates that we would need to see in order to support the recycled waters financially. So moving on to wastewater transfer, I have one slide that is actually pretty brief. Currently, our transfer is about 3.4% or 3.4 million, and that equates to about 2.9% on wastewater revenues. We did look at what the impact would be if we increase that $1 million. For every $1 million increase, it would have a corresponding impact on wastewater rates at 0.9%, but could also decrease recycled water rates by 10%. As part of the study, we looked to make sure that we could legally justify that transfer. In our analysis, in Corolla's analysis, the max that we could actually transfer is $7.5 million. But as you can see, that's less than 50%, which certainly shows that wastewater gets a great benefit from that. All right, moving on to rate calculations. Let me go through these. Okay, good. We did look at several options. One was an equal rate increase, which was across the board 3%. We also looked at another alternative, which is distributed wastewater transfers according to use. And then the third option, which is what the recommendation is to hold ag constant over the next 2 years, so 0% increase for 2023 and 2024, with a 3% increase on others, non-ag. So really, just the quick summary as far as key points. Market analysis, certainly on the cost of pumping groundwater, is within reason. Our revenue requirements only require 3% over the next couple years to ensure that the wastewater system is financially sustainable. The transfer, certainly we could transfer up to the $7.5 million, but we're only transferring the 3.5, so any increase needed to support rates could be done from the wastewater transfer. The impact on the current budget for next year is only about $80,000. And will be offset by net margin. So overall, the rate increase, 0% for ag and 3% for non-ag. So just showing you the rate recommendations here. In the red box, you can see that ag is constant with the 2022 rates, which is the first column. And then you can see the 3% increase in non-ag and demand ag for 2023 and 2024. So quickly on outreach, this was a notice public hearing. PGA did significant outreach to our customers. There was a website post on April 25th. There were four targeted emails over the past six weeks, and it was included in our newsletter with the public hearing date and the summaries of the findings. As of at least this morning, we had not received any written protests. So just quickly on schedule and recommendation, this just sort of recaps the schedule. Again, started in September of 2023. We have today's public hearing at June 15th. It shows the staff workshops that occurred, the planning committee meetings, and the board presentations. Once approved by the board, rates would be implemented January 1st, 2023. So today's recommendation is to approve and adopt the proposed resolution approving the calendar year 2023 rates. And administering the amending the administrative code for the consolidated rate schedule. This is a decrease. As you know, the board did approve a 5.8% that would go into effect in 2023. This actually reduces that to at least 3% for non-ag and demand ag, or non-ag and demand ag, and zero for ag. So with that, staff is available for any questions.
Director Slauson.
Just a question. I think it was well thought out, and I think that I like the way they quantified the avoided costs. But you also mentioned the incentive not to pump groundwater. Is there any way to quantify that financially? Is there a benefit?
Well, for them not to pump, as far as for us?
For us.
Well, I think as depending on which basin and us being able to pump that water ourselves, right, as far as what our abilities are, we can use that for potable water sales ultimately. So it does, you know, sustain that basin. Quantifiable.
And to that point, Director Slauson, within the depends where that pumping would occur. If it's in the adjudicated basin in the San Jacinto-Hemet area, then all the parties to that adjudication would be the beneficiaries for that reduced pumping. If it's on the west side of the basin, again, depends on if it's in the brackish basin where we have our desalinization program. But I agree with you, which is that there is a significant benefit in having our recycled water reduce, if not eliminate, the groundwater pumping, because then that resource is available for all of our customers to utilize. Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Director Record, do you have any questions? I'm sorry. Director Record, do you have any questions?
No questions, but comments. I appreciate the process. I thought it was very good. And Director Cronin and I put in a lot of hours and had really good discussions, and I'm pleased with the result. So I'd like to move forward.
Very good. Thank you. Director Armstrong.
I just had a comment. I just wanted to compliment staff and the planning committee for a great job. It's really a fresh look, comprehensive look, and the results really are really great, and in particular in these times right now to see 3%, you know, future projections. I hope it stays that way. But just wanted to compliment you on a great job.
Thank you.
No, and I'm gonna chime in here and just note that I, as you noted, our valley-wide sales have increased, and for the public to understand, that means that we are using our recycled system to do green belts and parks and all the things that I have encouraged us to do over the last several years. So I'm happy to see those numbers that we are able to keep in a drought situation. We're able to keep our parks and green belts functioning because we have expanded our recycled water system. So very good. Thank you for the presentation on that. Will the district's council please make a statement regarding necessity for reading the proposed resolution regarding resolution number 5111 of the administrative code and the consolidated schedule of rates, fees, and charges?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The reading of proposed resolutions to amend resolution number 5111 administrative code and the consolidated schedule of rates, fees, and charges may be dispensed with since everyone present either has a copy or may obtain a copy from the district's website.
Very good. I'd like to ask the board secretary how the hearing was noticed.
The notice of the public hearing was posted to the district's website, emailed to 178 recycled water customers, and mailed to 422 recycled water customers, dated May and June 2022, and copies are on file with the district.
Thank you. Will I again ask legal counsel to explain the purpose of today's hearing?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The hearing is being conducted pursuant to the California Constitution, Article 13D, Section 6, concerning property-related fees and charges. That imposes some notice and hearing requirements on the district, which have been complied with. Namely, the parcels who will be charged are the amount of the charge has to be calculated. The notice has to be mailed to each property owner with a notice containing the amount of the charge, the basis for the charge, the reason for the charge, and the date and time of this public hearing. And I will note that if written protests against the charge are presented by a majority of the owners of the subject properties, then the agency shall not impose these charges and rates.
Thank you. The Secretary of the Board has received any written protest to the report. I'd like her to provide copies, therefore, to the Board.
No written comments have been received.
Thank you. At this time, are there any members of the public that wish to speak on this matter? If so, please come forward to the podium, state your name and address for the record, and present your comments. I see no members of the public wanting to talk on this particular item. In that case, I will accept a motion as second to adopt the proposed resolution approving the calendar year 2023 recycled water rates, amending the EMWD administrative code, and incorporating certain rates, fees, and charges.
So moved.
Moved by Director Corona.
Second.
Second by Director Record. Get a roll call vote, please.
Director Pauley?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And that passes 5-0. We will now move on to our second public hearing of the morning. This is the time and place to set a duly noticed public hearing regarding the adoption of Ordinance 59.7, Regulations for Waste Discharge and Sewer Use. I will declare the public hearing open and ask staff for a report on the proposed action.
Good morning, President Pauley and members of the board. I'm Alfred Javier, Director of Environmental and Regulatory Compliance. I'm here for the public hearing to approve for the adoption of Regulatory Waste Discharge and Sewer Ordinance 59.7. Ordinance 59 is the regulation set forth for our waste discharge order. It provides the requirements to have a regional pretreatment program. The drivers of the pretreatment program in Ordinance 59 is the Clean Water Act. Ordinance 59 regulates the sewer discharge specifically for commercial and industrial users. During the last EPA audit, recommendations were made to add definitions and to clarify in order to better reflect the requirements. Those examples are shown. Language including requirements requiring significant industrial users to notify district of changing affecting the potential of a slug discharge, include definitions of Clean Water Act or the discharge, and then clarification regarding pollutant measurements requiring for baseline monitoring report. In addition to the recommendation given by the EPA, a prohibition of the discharge of hydrolysate has been added. Hydrolysate is the process of dissolving human and animal remains into a liquid. The process is known as alkaline hydrolysis. It uses heat and pressure in a combination of caustic chemicals such as potassium hydroxide or sodium hydroxide to dissolve human and animal remains. Alkaline hydrolysis is also known as resumation, chemical cremation, flameless cremation, or biocremation. In October 2017, Assembly Bill 967 was enacted, and this led to the amendment of the Business and Professional Code. The Code of the Cemetery and Funeral Act allows a public agency the discretion to authorize or prohibit the discharge of hydrolysate into the sewer system, which includes the purpose of promoting advanced water recycling system, and which you know that the district has been pursuing. Again, the prohibition is only for the discharge into the sewer resulting from the liquid from hydrolysate. Our staff recommendation is to adopt Ordinance 59.7. I have here present also his staff members, John Jackson, as well as the Source Control Manager, David Trujillo, to answer any questions. I'm ready for those.
Do we have any questions from board members on this item at this time? Director Record, any questions?
No questions.
Very good. Thank you very much for the report. This time I'd ask the Secretary of the Board how this hearing was noticed.
The notice of the public hearing was published May 13, 2022 in the Press Enterprise newspaper to consider public comment on Eastern Municipal Water District's Ordinance 59.7.
Very good. If the Secretary of the Board has received any written protest to the report, I'd like to ask her to provide copies to the Board at this time.
Written comments have been received from 12 individuals and have been provided to the board.
Thank you very much, and I trust everyone has received those. At this time, are there any members of the public that would like to speak on this matter? If so, please come forward to the podium, state your name and address and your comments, and we would like to limit those comments to about 3 minutes each. Do we have any members of the public that would like to speak on this item?
President Pauley, we do have a couple people on our Zoom that would like to participate.
Okay. Could we do so at this time?
Yes. First one we have here, David, did you want to make public comment? David?
Yes, no, I'm here. I have no comment at this moment.
Okay, moving on. Samantha, would you like to provide public comment?
Hi, are you able to hear me?
Yes, we are.
Sure.
I'm trying to figure out the Zoom. Is it working?
Yes.
Okay, sorry about that. Thank you. Hi, my name is Samantha Sieber. I'm a biologist, and by degree, I serve as vice president of research for my family's company, BioResponse Solutions, based in Indiana. Don't know if I need to add my address. It's 200 Collin Court, Danville, Indiana, 46122.
Thank you.
My company makes, we specialize in technologies that decrease environmental impact. And one of the things that we produce are alkaline hydrolysis systems. Alkaline hydrolysis systems have been discharging to the sanitary systems for over 30 years. Over the past 15 years, I've personally obtained over 400 permissions to discharge by local municipal authorities. I haven't been turned down for one for over 15 years, knock on wood. The prohibition for the discharge of the alkaline hydrolysis system seems to have, I ran into this issue in 2016 after I had a system for pets in Orange County, California. When the bill came in to action to legalize the process for humans, we, sorry about, I'm on a conference call. I'm sorry about that. Sorry about that, everybody. I apologize. When we ran into this issue in Orange County, California, Orange County had allowed a pet system to run for many years. When the bill came about for human systems, they decided to pass a prohibition against the discharge of systems. And I successfully addressed the board in Orange County in order to the issues that come along with doing a prohibition. This is no emission process. The environmental impact from having to do something as an alternative to going discharging to the sanitary sewer is a very heavy environmental cost. The liquids weigh 9 pounds per gallon. It'd be extremely energy intensive to tank and try to do something else with that material. And I think the biggest, the comments that I really want to propose today would be maybe I'd like the opportunity to postpone passing this prohibition through. It is different than what WEMD and OCSD have passed. They actually only prohibit the discharge from human machines, and those are working on being overturned at the moment. They do not prohibit the discharge from pet machines. There is no scientific public health and safety issue with the discharge going to the wastewater plant. And I think that we're underestimating the scientific understanding that the and confidence that the public has in the wastewater treatment system. I have systems that are discharging and have been for many years to some direct reclamation systems. And one of those includes in Las Vegas, Nevada. I have a pet and human systems discharging to their direct reclamation system. Their wastewater plant goes directly into Lake Mead. And
ma'am, if I could, ma'am, you're a little over the 3 minute mark. So if you could maybe perhaps wrap up your comments, that'd be appreciated.
Thank you. Thanks for the reminder. Sorry, I got a little disjointed there. I would like the opportunity to provide some further information on the published and peer-reviewed studies, the data. I don't think that we should operate from a perception that that there's going to be a perceived public perception issue. We have 30 years of data that there isn't a public perception issue, and I think the public has scientific literacy to understand that this is a very environmentally sound, doesn't pose any risk to them going to the wastewater treatment plant. I'd be happy to work with. I've had a great experience with John Jackson and David Trujillo. I would like to continue to provide information so that this decision isn't made in haste. Thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am, for those comments. I'll ask one more time, are there any other speakers that would like to address the board on this item?
President Pauly, we do have one more individual, Dr. Pace.
Okay.
Dr. Pace, are you there?
Yes, I am here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
We can. And again, sir, if we could limit it to about 3 minutes, that would be great.
Absolutely. So let me introduce myself. I'm those that don't know me. I'm Dr. Lonnie Pace. I'm the owner of these community businesses, Epic Pets, Tree of Life, Sub-Zero, and OJI. My education background includes a degree in human biology and physiology from the University of Kansas, a bachelor's degree in medical microbiology from Colorado State. I hold a doctorate in veterinary medicine from Colorado State. I'm one of 800 individuals in the world that is board certified in emergency and critical care for animals. I was also working towards my PhD in virology when I was invited to attend vet school. I've designed from ground up and built wastewater systems for highly specialized and closed systems that have a much stricter discharge standard than any wastewater treatment plant in the United States. So I'm here to provide support and advocate for my community and be a resource to this board as a critical care specialist with a background in infectious disease and how this process works. I think that the science, we can all agree, the science and the research shows that these systems are in no way and negatively impact the wastewater system. That's fact. We can also agree that research shows that these are the gold standard for medical and biological waste, which is why veterinarians across the world are turning to these systems. And let me be clear, as you stated, the EPA is not against this. That is something that you guys have added from Mr. Jackson. So let's talk about the biosafety and critical care. In my world, as well as my human physician counterparts, nutrition is a vital part to healing. And when a patient can no longer eat or drink, we support them with IV or feeding tube nutrients. These commercially available products all have the same content: sugars, amino acids, salts, and fat. Interestingly enough, the discharge from our unit is the exact same thing. Sugars, salts, amino acids, and fats. No viruses, no bacteria, no parasites, no DNA or RNA, which is exactly what you're getting out of your human hospitals right now, what you're getting out of your rendering plants, what you're getting out of your labs and your funeral homes. There's no coliforms. This is 100%. It basically produces a sterile, practically medical-grade solution of nutrients. My final talking point is that we're stewards to our land and our environment in this community. I brought this technology to our community for this very reason. In California, we have some of the worst air quality in the world. And to top that, in the Eastern Municipal Water District, we have cities that are the worst in California. Some of our cities are in the top 2%, 0.2%, meaning that there are 1,700 cities in California alone that have better air quality. So how does this technology help? Well, it certainly reduces the amount of bodies that are cremated and sent into our skies. We're going to be breathing a heck of a lot less dead bodies. If the process is banned as being proposed, that means we have to truck all this away to the Imperial Valley or the Central Valley where they're clamoring for this discharge. This, of course, leads to worsening air quality and higher fossil fuel consumption. So in closing, we know the facts, and the science and the EPA support our environmental cause. I just wanted to say I'm here for the board. I wouldn't mind, you know, being a resource to help you guys make the right decision, because the public really, you're stewards for the public, you're stewards for the environment. These are your elected constituents that you're representing. Do the right thing for them, and let us help you if we need to. But don't make a hasty decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, sir, for that comment. I'll ask the board secretary, do we have any other comments online?
I do not see any more comments.
Good, and I understand we have no comments in the chamber. I do have some follow-up questions. Mr. Mawad, if you would like to take the podium.
Sure. Thank you, President Pauly, members of the board. I have had an opportunity, as I'm sure you have, to review the comment letters that were provided to us. I just wanted to provide some additional context and information as the board deliberates its decision on this matter. Let me be clear. We are not opposed to the process of aquamation, nor are we asking the board to prohibit such an operation within our service area. Currently, we do not have any operating or permitted aquamation processes within our service area. If a business wanted to operate such a facility, and we do have one that has submitted an application, they have alternatives to the disposal of the material into the sewer. They can haul the material, the liquid, to an approved landfill, or they can secure a permit to discharge into the Inland Empire brine line. Mind you, we have other businesses in our service area that we currently regulate that are required to haul their waste product into the Inland Empire brine line. So this is not something new in terms of regulating discharge into our sewer system. Our recommendation today is based on extensive review by our subject matter experts and talking to our legal counsel regarding this matter. We are making this recommendation to our board based on several considerations. As the board is aware, for a number of years now, we have been advancing our indirect potable reuse program. And a significant aspect of this effort is public acceptance, allowing such a discharge into our recycled water system would undermine the public acceptance campaign that we've worked on for the last many years. There's other operational concerns that we've also looked at, including a potential for creation of soap into the collection system that we would have to address and vet. And as I mentioned earlier, I know we've discussed this matter extensively with legal counsel to make sure that this is entirely within our prerogative. And Stephen, if you don't mind, can you weigh in on the legal aspect of this?
As you know, the district's organizing statutes and the set of statutes from which we derive the district's powers is the Municipal Water Districts Act of 1911, and it addresses the district's powers to do, of course, to deliver and supply water, as well as to deliver and supply sanitary services. And in the set of statutes that talk about your provision of sanitary services, you clearly have the discretion to determine what waste you can accept and what waste you can exclude into your system. So, in short, the district has the statutory authority to determine whether or not it can allow any type of waste, certain type of waste into its system. So you do have the statutory authority to make this determination.
And lastly, I would add that there are other agencies that have taken very similar steps to what we are recommending today. With that, myself and the entire team here would be happy to answer any question the board may have.
Director Armstrong.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the brine line. I know that we've worked hard to secure additional capacity into the future for future needs, so that's nice to know that that's an option. The question I have is, I'm not really familiar with this, and so relying on staff's recommendation, I understand the public perception concern, but is there a more scientific concern about the effluent that's actually, or what's coming into our plant? Is there a concern about really what's I guess the influent to the plant?
To your question, the issue for us primarily is the public perception, and whether we like it or not, often public perception and confidence in our recycled water and our purified recycled water is as important as science, if you will. Ultimately, the public is concerned about what enters into the system. They will be reluctant to accept drinking that water. So for us, public perception, given the sensitivity of our campaign, is critical.
Any other questions?
I don't think I have any questions. I would just comment. I support staff's recommendation. And there, you mentioned the one operational concern with regards to soaps. So, and there is an alternative for them to dispose. And I think our IPR program is critical, so we need to.
Yeah, I mean, let me ask. Director Record, do you have any comments on this or questions?
No. I don't. I mean, this is difficult. I appreciate the public comment, and it's been respectful. But, as staff has pointed out, science may be on this their side, but we really have to look at the big picture here. And it makes me want to really look at other parts of what's being discharged into the sewer system.
Maybe I would ask a question. Is there any reason that we know of why the legislature and governor approved in a business professions code allowing an agency to disallow or to allow, either one.
Well, I know that, is your question, did the governor allow the agencies to maintain its discretion?
No, no, I mean, why did they give us the discretion to not allow disposal?
I suspect it's because the legislature felt that these decisions should be left to the local agency to make that determination.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
So I was going to make a few comments here. First of all, I do appreciate the input from the public on this matter this morning, and it has brought up a lot of questions to me, and I agree with Director Record at some point, maybe for a future board agenda item, to have a report on what it is we do allow and disallow into our system, because I think that would be helpful. You know, I'm a dog owner, a long time. I support the veterinarian community. This is a tough call. But again, there is an alternative. I understand, as one of our speakers pointed out, yes, this is an alternative to air pollution, and I could not agree more to that. But the fact of the matter is there is a secondary opportunity to dispose of this material without putting it into our system, and for that reason, I will be with the staff recommendation this morning. So, but I do appreciate the input. I would also encourage staff going forward to continue to listen and hear arguments. But at this time, if there are no other comments from board members, I will declare the
President Pauly.
Yes.
May I interrupt?
Yes.
We did have an additional participant that would like to provide public comments.
Okay.
Would you allow that?
I will allow that to be back opened up. So if we could, and we have a
great David.
Yes, hi. Thank you for.
If you could thank you for joining us. If you could limit your comments to 3 minutes, that would be appreciated.
Absolutely. Thank you. I just wanted to make a comment about the stigma for the public, as far as the public consideration of what is going into their reclaimed water. I'm in a water district just south of you with a human machine that's been accepted here. We also do water reclamation for reuse here. They also sell it to SDG&E for, you know, other purposes as well. But it is, there are some places close by you that allow it. Is there a different, are your treatment plants different in reclamation than some of the others in Southern California? Or just, are they more antiquated? What makes the difference of not being able to process effluent, if you will? And if it's just the public consideration, has there been I'm not sure if there's been a survey done, but what would allow, Mr. Armstrong, what would allow other wastewater districts to be able to do the exact same thing with, of course, maybe even bigger populations than Eastern Municipal Water District? That would be my question.
President Pauly, if I can maybe provide some additional clarifications. To that question, what makes us distinct from some of the other neighboring agencies is that we are advancing an indirect portable reuse program, meaning that we plan to utilize that recycled water for potable drinking purposes. Our plants utilize the latest technologies. In fact, I would say they are on the leading edge of technologies, including membrane reactors that we use at the Temecula Recycled Water Plant. So it is the latest technologies at our wastewater facilities, but we are unique in that we utilize all of that recycled water. Our customers benefit from it, and we are looking at very soon using that water for potable purposes. So that is what's unique from our neighboring agencies. Thank you.
All right. So I understand we have no further people wishing to do public comment. With that, I will declare the public hearing closed. I will look for a motion and a second to approve and the receipt and the filing of Ordinance 59.7.
So moved.
Moved by Director Slauson, seconded by Director Armstrong. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauley?
Aye.
President Corona, or Director Corona, sorry. Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And that passes 5-0. We will now move on to our General Manager's report.
Thank you, President Pauley, members of the board. My report is included in your packet. Under new and ongoing items, I'm very pleased to share with the board that last week we received an additional $1.8 million from the state under the California Water and Wastewater Arrearages Payment Program to address residential and commercial arrearages for our customers. As you're aware, we had previously received $3.6 million in December of 2021 to address water arrearages. Combined, so far, we have received $5.4 million. In addition to the funding that we received from the states, as the board is aware, the delinquency processes were reinstated on March 14th of this year following the expiration of the governor's executive order that temporarily had imposed a shutoff moratorium, which expired end of the calendar year in 2021. Both the CWAP funding that I just mentioned that we have received, as well as resumption of the delinquency processes, have led to a reduction of over $6 million in past due balances year to date. Later this morning, staff, Charles Kamaru and team will be providing an in-depth information item to the board, sharing with you and detailing the current delinquency data and customer payment activities, as well as other trends related to the resumption of the delinquency processes. The next item I wanted to share with the board, we're very pleased that the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation has recently restarted operation of the Paradox Valley unit, which has been on hiatus for over 3 years. As the board is aware, this facility is critical in reducing salts in the Colorado River. They, in fact, extract salts from a tributary to the Colorado River and concentrate that salt and perform deep earth injection. Back in 2019, the operation of the Paradox Valley unit was suspended due to earthquakes that may have been occurred or may have been caused by deep earth injections. There was a significant review of that process, and we have submitted letters to the Bureau requesting reinitiation of the operation of the unit, and as of last week, the unit has restarted at 67% of capacity, and operation of that unit will help maintain the lower levels of salts within our supplies via the Colorado River. The next item I wanted to share with the board is that on June 1st, Jolene Walsh and myself had a meeting with Aaron Brockovich and former Senator Boxer to discuss, and their team of attorneys, to discuss PFAS issues, and specifically they are soliciting clients within the Santa Ana River watershed to join in litigation to fund damages caused by PFAS pollution. The strategy that they have proposed is to join forces with other water agencies within the watershed to improve potentially negotiating power and pursue the chemical manufacturers to fund PFAS cleanup in the watershed. They provided a briefing as far as what they saw in terms of the future regulations for PFAS, both on the water and biosolids end of things. This team has successfully settled with manufacturers, including 3M and DuPont, for other clients in other states. So I will be meeting with the other general managers within the Santa Ana watershed and discussing a preferred path forward, and we'll also follow up with our legal counsel and discuss our alternatives, and of course, I'll be reporting back to the board accordingly. Under items of interest to the board, on June 6th, myself and staff had an opportunity to meet with the general managers and staff from Elsinore Valley Municipal Water District, Rancho California Water District, and Western Municipal, and it was an opportunity to advance our joint agency water supply resiliency study. The consultant was part of the conversation whereby we looked at the various portfolios of options that were previously discussed, including sources of supply options, storage options, be it surface or ground water storage, conveyance and treatment options. It was a very productive conversation. We also discussed the development of criteria by which we're going to be screening these various portfolios. Ultimately, we are planning to bring forward additional findings and information to the electeds who are participating in this effort in August of this year. So more information to come, but it was a very productive joint agency meeting last week that was held. Finally, I wanted to remind the board that next week we're very pleased to have our dedication event for our Paris 2 desalinization complex. This has been a long time coming. We continue to send out invites to our partners and stakeholders on this initiative. I'm pleased to share with you that the chairman of the State Water Resource Control Board, Joaquin Esquivel, will be joining us next week and will be delivering remarks on behalf of the State Board. We will also have representatives from Congressman Takano's office, Senator Melendez's office, Assembly Member Medina's office, and the executive officer from the Santa Ana Regional Water Quality Control Board. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions the board may have.
Any questions for our general manager?
I have a question. Is that Paradox Valley, that is that down near Yuma, or where is that?
Yes, it's in that vicinity, correct.
Okay, thank you.
Director Record, any questions for Mr. Mawad?
Yeah, Joe, what is the date for the dedication of the desalter?
Director Record, it's on June 23rd at 9 a.m. in the morning.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Laura, do we have anything for us this morning?
Nothing today.
Nick?
I have nothing today. Thank you.
Linaya?
Yes. Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. Traffic control for the closure of Murrieta Road between Puerto Vallarta and La Piedra was installed on June 1st to facilitate the construction of the Murrieta Road transmission pipeline. That closure was scheduled for 3 weeks. Pipeline installation started on June 2nd, and the contractor is currently working 6 days a week, 10 hours a day. Based on that schedule, they were hoping to beat the estimated 3-week shutdown. However, the contractor encountered rock, and which has slowed the production. However, even with that current field condition, the contractor is still anticipating meeting the 3-week projected schedule, which is consistent with what we have communicated with the city.
All right. Thank you very much for that. Matt, anything for us this morning?
Good morning. No updates from me today.
Very good. Appreciate that. We will move on to our consent calendar. Does any members of the board wish to pull an item for further discussion or have a conflict on any item on the consent calendar? Director Record?
I'll move the consent calendar.
Sorry. Very good. Moved by Director Record, seconded by Director Corona. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Crona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And the consent calendar passes 5-0. We will now move on to our action calendar for the morning. First item 5A is to approve an authorized insurance package renewal with Goodwin Insurance Agency and Glatfelter Public Practice for $1.5 million for fiscal year 2223 in an appropriation in the amount of $1.6 million. Doug, you're going to present this to us this morning.
Good morning, Good morning. President Pauly, members of the board. My name is Doug Heffley. I am the Director of Safety, Risk, and Emergency Management. I'm here this morning to present the annual renewal of EMWD's portfolio of insurance coverage. EMWD's current insurance broker is the Goodwin Insurance Agency. This morning, we have Holly Grimm, partner and chief operating officer of Goodwin, here with us.
Oh, good morning. Thank you for attending our board meeting. I appreciate it very much.
The Goodwin Insurance Agency serves the district well. They are involved in our day-to-day operations with answering insurance questions related to coverages being provided by outside companies. Around March of each year, EMWD staff and insurance broker begin to assess the insurance needs of the district. At that time, Holly and the Goodwin team will go out to the insurance market on behalf of EMWD. That effort entails finding insurance that best meets the needs of the district, provides broad coverage, and is cost-effective. EMWD's current insurance company is Glatfelter Public Practice. Glatfelter is an industry leader for public practice and has an excellent water industry program of which Eastern is currently a member of. Glatfelter bundles general liability, commercial auto, property, and first layer excess liability together into one package, which allows the district to receive maximum premium discounts and allows for administrative efficiencies. The proposal submitted by Goodwin is broken into six categories that allow us to compare current proposed premiums in comparison to fiscal year 21-22 premiums. The liability package proposed premium is $197,487, representing a slight decrease in premium in comparison to fiscal year 21-22. The proposed commercial auto liability premium is $189,540, representing a decrease in premium of approximately 8.5% in comparison to fiscal year 21-22. And for any of us that have auto liability insurance, or we all should, we know to see a decrease in this area of 8.5% is truly phenomenal. The proposal for the first $10,000 of excess liability premium is $194,547, representing a decrease of 2.5% in comparison to fiscal year 21-22. The proposed additional $20 million of excess liability premium is $268,342, representing an increase of approximately 25% over fiscal year 21-22. This increase is largely due to the market conditions, which have been significantly impacted by the global pandemic, large jury awards against public agencies, social inflation, and other global factors. The proposed property package premium is $446,430, representing an increase of 6.4% over fiscal year 21-22, but that is largely due to an increase in property being covered by our policy of about $34.4 million, and that was adding newly constructed or expanded EMWD facilities. The total of property insured is just under $894 million in scheduled properties. After submission of this board item, EMWD staff and Goodwin continued to work with EMWD's excess workers' compensation insurance provider, Safety National Casualty Company. With truing up of underwriting data and the hard work of Ms. Grimm and the team at Goodwin, I'm pleased to inform you that the renewal premium has decreased from that represented in the board letter. The proposed excess workers' compensation premium is $256,262, or roughly $26,000 less than the original proposal. This is an increase overall of 21% over fiscal year 21-22. And then this increase is largely due to the effects of the global pandemic, instability in the workers' compensation market, and also just general inflation, which greatly affects these areas. Our broker's fees remain flat this year at $77,100. The insurance package proposed will responsibly serve the needs of the district and do so in a cost-effective manner. The insurance premiums for 22-23 renewal period represent a 6.9% increase over last fiscal year's premiums. The total of the premiums is under the fiscal year 22-23 budget for all such premiums by approximately 12%. We're asking you today to approve and authorize the procurement of the complete insurance package proposed in the amount of $1,578,835 and appropriation of $1,655,935 for all coverage, including broker's fees. And I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Before we go to questions, I wanted to say our guest from Goodwin, I appreciate you being here. Did you want to make any comments to the board this morning?
Give a girl a microphone. I just want to say we have enjoyed working with Eastern for the last number of years. We truly appreciate the professionalism that is generated by all of your staff. And we hope to continue to be able to represent you well in the future. And just know that you're appreciated as well. Thank you.
Very good. Well, I appreciate you coming this morning. Any questions for either?
No.
I will simply make the comment as a father of a 16-year-old boy. I'm jealous of our auto insurance rates. But Director Record, any questions? Or would you like to make a motion on this?
I'll make a motion to approve.
Second by Director Armstrong. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Crono?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And that passes 5-0. Thank you both. We'll move on to item B, which is to approve and authorize an agreement with Conserve Construction Incorporated for $2 million for outdoor water use efficiency program. Good morning.
Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. My name is Sarah Quintero, and I'm the Water Resources Planning Manager for the Conservation Department. Mm-hmm. And today, Dan Carney and myself will be giving a presentation on our outdoor water use efficiency program. So in 2019, the board authorized the development of the new outdoor water use efficiency program. And this was really the first comprehensive residential program that staff developed because it provides a variety of services for residential customers under one hub. So some of these services include landscape evaluations, replacement of inefficient devices such as controllers and nozzles. There's also a huge education component involved. And something really neat about this program is that we also now offer landscape plan designs. So many times residential customers will call and say, I'm thinking about redoing my front yard or my backyard, but I don't really know where to start. So now we have these beautiful templates that we can refer them to, hopefully for some inspiration and some ideas, and get them to convert those yards. And lastly, I did want to note that this is the first zero share of cost program for residential customers. So with that, we went live with the program in July of 2021, and the program greatly exceeded expectations. Over 1,200 applications received, 800 services completed. Now, the direct installation component of the program has been handled by Conserve, Inc., but that agreement does end at the end of this month.
Sarah, good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. I'm Dan Carney, Principal Water Resources Specialist. This chart shows a distribution of the customers who have participated in our program throughout our communities and looks at it in a kind of unique way. It shows, for example, in the orange bars, in French Valley on the left, 21% of the participants in the program live in French Valley, whereas we only have a small percentage, 3%, of our single-family residential customers there. Same with Hemet. We see 11% participation with 8% of the population. And you can look across the board. I think it's a good distribution in every community, really, that people are interested in this program. Here's a little closer look at the count of services that have been provided since the program began in August through April of this year. 389 smart irrigation timers, and I just want to point out these are the state-of-the-art timers that are out there right now. They use Wi-Fi to access a whole network of weather stations around each residence and predict the weather coming up and track the weather reports. So it's the most accurate way to keep our customers on budget by far. The landscape evaluations, 422 have been completed. And this is the educational component, which is absolutely essential to work with customers, residential customers, who often don't really understand, you know, how their irrigation system may work and how to best use that to keep their landscape healthy. And then high-efficiency sprinkler nozzles, which essentially eliminate overspray and overuse. Knowing that our current agreement was going to expire this month, staff released a request for proposals in May to continue the program through 2024. And the services are really identical in terms of the scope of work. It's a balance of equipment installed and educational support and staff support for our residential customers. The thing that has changed based on our current participation, our expected participation in the future, is we're increasing our estimated participants to 4,000 customers over the 2 years. So whereas during our current period of time, we expected maybe 500 to 1,000, we've greatly exceeded that. For the next 2 years, we're expecting 1,000 to 2,000 per year participants. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Sarah.
Thank you, Dan. So we did receive four proposals in response to our RFP. Each proposal was scored on a point system, and additionally, we interviewed the top two firms. And after concluding those interviews, we are recommending Conserve Construction, Inc. for the program services agreement. As Dan mentioned, we are anticipating to service about 2,000 customers a year at about $500 average cost. We're looking at a maximum amount of $2 million. I did want to make a special note that we do have Conserve Construction, Inc. here today. We have Cindy and Steve, who are the owners of the company, and we are recommending them for the agreement because of their extensive experience, their high level of customer service, and their pricing as well. I did want to make a note as well about the $2 million. Through Metropolitan's member agency program, we do receive reimbursement for the direct installation of smart controllers and nozzles. So to date, we've already recovered about $40,000 of our costs, and this will continue with this new program, so we can expect some reimbursement. And with that, we would like to recommend that the board approve and authorize the agreement with Conserve Construction, Inc. with an amount not to exceed $2 million. And happy to answer any questions you have.
Very good. First, very good questions. I'd like to point out, thank you very much for being here this morning, and always appreciated for attendance by people that are up for contracts here. Any questions from board members? We'll start with Director Crona and work our way down.
I had a question on that one graph. There was in the Temecula area, you've got a lot of houses there, but not a lot of participation. Is that because Rancho may have a similar program, or just seems kind of odd? I don't know.
The program is the eligible participants are retail customers of the MWD.
Okay, so that's why.
Yeah. But interestingly, there's 2% of the customers have participated in only 1% of the population. So they're doing really well for a small population.
All right. Thank you.
Director Armstrong?
Yeah, just a quick question. You mentioned, I think, there's design templates that are those on the website where any customer can go and,
yes,
and see those?
They are.
Thanks.
Let me ask, and then I'll get to ask Director Record if he has any questions, but I mean, at my house, I just put in some new landscaping in my house, too, and worked with one of the local nurseries on finding the right product mix for this. But it always seems that my gardener person kind of runs the operations of making sure it gets watered correctly. I forgot, do we have a program or do we reach out to people that do lawn maintenance and maybe have a yearly program for them to make sure that they're educated on doing all the right things?
President Pauly, thank you for that question. Basically, during the period of COVID, when we were starting this program, we had designed an ongoing training program exactly like you described that would be in person. Because of COVID, we converted it to an online training program. So we currently have about 90 contractors and landscape workers enrolled in the online training program. for EMWD. So we're in active communication with them. They can get a certificate saying they've completed the program, and if they're licensed contractors, we offer to actually put their company on our website and promote them.
Okay. No, that's what I thought. But, I mean, I hopefully we can get back to some personal participation on that, because I do think that is one of the keys to doing this. Is I know in my personal case, a gardener came to me and said, hey, you're overwatering here. And I said, well, go fix it. I'm not that's what I'm paying you for. Go fix
it. You should have some personal participation in the landscape of your own yard there. Hustle a little more.
But I just want to make sure that we are helping educate the folks that actually do some of the real work. So I do appreciate that. Director Record, any questions on this item?
No judgment on what you do with your garden. I'll move the item.
I'll second.
Moved by Director Record, second by Director Corona. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And that passes 5-0. Thank you so much. Thank you again for being here. And look forward to working with you very much. So, all right, we'll go on to item C, which is to approve proposed mid-cycle budget update for fiscal year 2022-2023. Mr. Adams, welcome back this morning.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. For my second presentation today, I'll be discussing the proposed budget adjustments for fiscal year 22-23, which starts July 1st, less than... 16 days away. So let me go to the first slide. So here are the topics I plan to cover today. Knowing that the board is certainly very interested in how inflation has been impacting the district, we have a couple slides to talk about, not just the, you know, where inflation is and the impacts in those different categories, but really focus on some of the mitigating efforts that the district is doing. And I know the team, both on the ops and the capital side, are spending a lot of time trying to balance those impacts. Next, talk really about the first about 21-22 budget, how we are performing. I gave the second quarter update with projections. We're still trending in a favorable for the remainder of the year. And then really talk about the impacts on this next coming budget. Talk briefly about wages and benefits, OFA, capital improvements, which I've asked Linnea to provide a quick update on, and then provide you a summary of all of the budget adjustments. And then finally, really just to give the board an overview of really our financial planning over the next 12 months. Certainly with a lot of the uncertainty, you know, this next 12 months is really going to be key. We have the cost of service study going on. That will help with our long-term financial plan, and then the budget process that starts literally in 6 months. So with that, the economic update, certainly this is something that we do every 2 years, mid-cycle, when they're going into our second year of our two-year budget. 2 years ago, certainly uncertainty, but related to COVID and very different challenges back then. But with the analysis done, the planning done by the district, we really did perform well over the past 2 years in anticipating some of the impacts, not anticipating all, but certainly we're very flexible in our approach. So this time the economy as a whole is facing a lot of uncertainty. As the economy began to open up from the shutdown from COVID, we've certainly experienced significant volatility due to several factors, including inflation, which is at a 40-year high, astronomical prices at the gas pump, and supply chain delays. Based on the recent inflation news, I'm sure you all know today's headline is that the Fed is meeting and determining how much to increase rates, by the end of the day. Certainly that is to try to curb inflation and hopefully and to avoid a recession. So the impacts to EMWD, and certainly we're seeing it across the board, whether it's fixed assets, capital improvements, just our normal operational costs, fuel, energy, materials, equipment, whatnot. And so we are seeing this across the board. I think two graphs that we have at the bottom is the one on the left is just to show you, and these are both through the first quarter of 2022, so March 30th. Shows you gasoline. This is really based on the invasion at Ukraine. Gasoline for that 12-month period, over 40% from the prior year, right? Electricity over 20%, over 10%. These are things that we're seeing directly impact EMWD. And then on the right, construction, building, and materials costs, certainly significant increase on material costs. Construction costs, as we have seen in our capital improvement program, has increased significantly. ENR is significantly up based on historical trends. So really going in and trying to figure out how are we mitigating against it, we really identified a few things that we just want to highlight. Certainly, Linnea will talk a little more about our capital improvement program and the impacts, the adjustments that have been made there. Certainly looking at scope, the needs of each project, looking at timing as we've seen some delays moving projects around, really trying to balance that. And certainly the capital team does a great job in planning and prioritizing projects, really looking out the 5 and 10 years. But that is a very dynamic plan that needs to be prioritized and moved around. Next, certainly looking at securing pricing, making early payments, securing materials ahead of time, paying based on current costs is another area. Another one is certainly related to inventory and also identifying alternative suppliers to ensure that we have plenty of materials in stock. We have a highlight of using sulfuric acid injection system instead of citric acid. Just another change in operation as we have strains there. Good example on fuel, I think last month the board approved an agreement on fuel and actually had an alternative supplier for fuel that was part of that agreement. So just another example of staff trying to mitigate those impacts. And then certainly on water supply, looking at a lot of other programs to potentially avoid some of the cost increases that we ultimately will see from MET. So continuing, talked about critical supply at the warehouse, and this certainly was part of the discussion that Dave Brown had provided Matt Melendrez related to sort of our inventory and making sure that we had critical items and stocking up on those so that we didn't see delays, especially on critical parts. Talked about solar production, certainly reducing our reliance on imported energy from Southern California Edison. So that has had great benefits. Also, the sale of the RECs from solar also has mitigated some of those cost increases. And then just on the finance side, certainly we do have vacancies, properly managing those, not adding staff, but looking at how do we restructure within the organization has been has saved money from that perspective. I can always say finance people always conservatively budget, and that certainly has been a little bit of a saving grace as we've seen increases in costs. And then lastly, just on the investment debt management, certainly managing the investment portfolio, certainly with rates increase, we are seeing earnings going up based on our balances, but also on the debt side, we had significant activity over the last 12 months prior to the run-up on the rates, have secured great long-term rates on some refunding and fixing out some debt. Our variable rate still performs pretty well. Surprisingly, even with the rate increases, our variable rate, I think, was about 30 basis points last Friday, so still performing well there. So those are really the efforts that we've been doing to try to mitigate the inflation. As we go through the presentation, I'll talk about some of the cost increases and that we see based on these inflationary numbers. So quickly on the budget update, this really just talks about the 21-22, the current budget, and I'll give a third quarter update later. That's my third presentation this morning on information. But we still perform, we're still performing favorably on the revenue side. Overall, 15% up over target. You'll see there's some areas like property tax, interest earnings, late fees, connection fees that are higher than budget. Even on our service revenues, both water and wastewater are trending higher than our budget is. On the expense side, we're lower. There's a few things that are one time. That's why the 6.7%. On the service side, we are really tight on both water and wastewater as far as expenses. All right, so should take a break. For 2022-23, we talk about the impacts on expenses. We do have some increases to revenue, some significant increases to revenue to offset those expenses. So in operating revenues, both water and wastewater, because of the growth within the district, we have seen revenues from fixed charges, you know, the daily service charge increase. We're recommending overall between the three, a $5 million increase. That's on about a $300 million budget related to service revenue. For non-operating revenues, this $5.3 million on connection fees is not that we anticipate more connections. We actually have very conservative projections on connection fees, about 3,000 EDUs. Right now we're trending over 4,500 EDUs. This 5.3 is really related to the ENR increases that occurred last year and that we anticipate in the coming year. On property tax, we actually project a 3% increase over the last 2 years or for the two-year budget. What we've actually seen has been higher. I think last year it was over 5%. We're actually projecting over 7% on this next year. So that really equates to about a $3 million increase on property tax. Interest income, I talked about rising rates. We are earning more on our reserve balances, and so that really equates to about a $1.5 million increase. And then late fees, I think Joe mentioned earlier about us starting that delinquency process. Late fees were reinstituted in September. We are already tracking at numbers prior to pre-pandemic, which is just over $4 million. So we only anticipated $3 million. We're increasing that to almost $4 million. So with that, those are the revenues. On the expense side, certainly this is where we're seeing inflation have impacts. Energy expense, overall, $4.6 million. This is approximately a 32% increase from the current budget. Salary and benefit increases is only a net of $3.5 million. I'll show a slide that shows those numbers. And then CalPERS, with the recent Fresh Start, there's an increase of $2.1 million. Talk about gas and diesel, overall increase of $840,000. That does include $300,000 for the emergency tank fills that will occur in July. Chemical increases 1.2. One of the areas that we are actually reducing is the pension liability contribution. This is really based on that strategy of funding about $15 million to the pension trust. We had the additional $4 million, and that was really geared towards the Fresh Start. So that $4 million is offsetting that $2.1 million. And then finally, we do have an increase on operating costs. We're in phase two of the ERP, which is to securing and procuring a new ERP system. Currently that is budgeted in OFA, but those consulting expenses are actually operating expenses, so we're moving the budget from OFA to operating. All right, so wages and benefits. we're really focusing on wages overall, CalPERS and the medical and other benefits. So the 2021-22 forecast, because of the cost of living adjustment that was done in January, we had initially projected 2%. It was actually 4.5. That increased the base, as you can see in the 21-22 forecast, by just about $1 million. That established a new base going forward. Our current budget is $70.8 million. The new budget projection is $74.1 million. An overall increase of 4.6%. That does include the one new position that the board approved in development services, and that occurred back based on the reorganization that was approved by the board in December of 2021. And then, as I mentioned, the CalPERS is actually increasing $2.1 million. This is two-thirds of that increase is based on the Fresh Start. $1.4 million of that $2.1 million is related to that Fresh Start, which is just amortizing our unfunded liability over 15 years. So overall, a $5.6 million increase on salary and benefits, which is roughly a 5.1% increase. Moving on to OFA, this is where we have a significant reduction, but mainly because of us pushing projects out. Overall, the reduction is $14.3 million. The change, if you look in the green, we had a little over $26 million budget. What we anticipate spending is $12 million. A lot of that is from the supply chain challenges. If you look at vehicles, my understanding is vehicles we've ordered and placed orders for over 80% of what we had scheduled for this, and this is just the timing delay. And so the forecast is only spending about $600,000 of that $3.7. So a lot of that money will be carried over into the next year for equipment that we'll receive then. On the IT, this is where we have the reduction for EOP. We actually made a reduction of about $12 million that will occur in the next two-year budget. On the operations side, because of delays and being able to get certain projects done, there is a slight reduction of $1.7 million, but there is some carryover, again, from in that area. Overall, reduction of $14.3 million. So with that, I'm going to turn over to Linnea to talk briefly about capital.
Great. All right. As John noted, several factors have impacted our overall budget, and some of those factors are consistently impacting our capital improvement program as well. As you know, we've been working very closely with the County of Riverside on securing ARPA funding for wastewater and water infrastructure projects in County Divisions 1, 3, and 5. Those were projects that were identified in our 5- and 10-year CIP. However, in order to meet the ARPA funding deadline, we had to expedite those projects, and those are actually moving up and are going to be started in our next fiscal year. So good news story, we'll be advancing projects like Wine Country and Mead Valley, but we did have to reshuffle our CIP in order to accommodate those additional funding expenditures in our next fiscal year. We also have the Los Alamos water infrastructure project that we're working on, and again, a project that is being expedited and moved forward into this current fiscal year CIP due to the available ARPA funding we are anticipating securing. We've also been impacted by inflation and pandemic impacts. An example, one of our large projects, the Paris North program, we're seeing an increase of 18% over what we had budgeted last year. That being said, we are continuing to work with the state to try to secure additional funding for that program. The state has been appreciative of the impacts that us and other projects are suffering from, but we have yet to get a full confirmation of how much additional funding we'll get. Engineering staff is continuing to look for value engineering options to try to reduce that impact. We also are continuing our condition assessment program as our facilities continue to age. It's important that we maintain our condition assessment, and through those evaluations, we did identify projects that needed, again, to be moved up into this next fiscal year, including the Roma Land Feeder replacement. We have also identified opportunities to remain resilient in PSPS events and identified projects that need to be implemented accordingly. We've also continued to see the uptick in development and projects that need to be implemented in order to support that growth. An example of that is our Pettit 1 tank, the 4.5 million gallon storage tank, and the associated pipeline to accommodate growth in Moreno Valley. You've seen this graph several times. This is what our CIP looked like for fiscal year 2021-2022, and I'm showing this in order to compare to the 2022-2023 CIP program. A couple things that I want to draw your attention to is the total number of projects, 181, and the amount of projects currently in the construction phase, which is represented in red in the pie graph on the right as 76%. This is that same chart for 2022-2023, and again, drawing your focus to the total number of projects in the table below, slightly less than the number of projects for fiscal year 2021-2022. However, a slight uptick in the percent of projects in or percent of that funding in construction, up to 80%. So we are seeing a large number of our big projects moving into that construction phase and continuing in that construction phase for the 2022-2023 CIP.
So here's a comparison for 2022-2023 compared to what we had forecasted in May of 2021. This is a 14% increase compared to May of 2021 based on all those factors that I described at the beginning of the presentation. This results in $116 million out of pocket, which is an increase of about just under $22 million. $13 million of that is projected in external funding, which is a decrease of almost $6 million as compared to May of 2021. However, again, this is related to that shuffling that we had to do in our CIP. When we estimate the amount of funding that we will be securing externally, it's based on where projects are in different phases, and again, what we anticipate we may be able to secure for those various phases. As we had to move projects up that were currently in the planned phase, those early expenditures are now going to be in the preliminary and final design phase. We don't get reimbursement for nearly the same amounts when we're in those phases as when we transition to the construction phase. So again, all of these moving parts and pieces to try to minimize the overall increase to our CIP, but still being able to capitalize on some of those external funding opportunities.
Thank you, Linnea. Finalize this is really the last slide in which with the items that we've discussed just really summarizes the overall impacts to the 22-23 budget. So in the revenues and in the first column, you can see the current approved budget at 402, and this is just in those categories. The updated budget is $418 million, an overall increase of $15.5 million. Again, noting that the connection fees are restricted revenues. Again, not expecting more growth, but just adjusting for what the current rates are. So those are restricted to capital and expansion projects. So really, overall, about $10 million increase in operating revenues. And then on the operating expenses, this is really the overall summary. You can see just about $10 million, a little over $10 million overall on operating expenses, again, being offset mostly by some of the operating revenues that we're going to be increasing as well. From this slide, you can see that 5.3 is the net impact of the operating margin and the positive. And then really looking at OFA, we talked about the reduction of the 14.3. A lot of that will be pushed off into future years. And as Linnea just covered, the net impact to us on the capital is 21. So overall, with all of these adjustments, the net impact on reserves is just under $2 million. So certainly with a lot of the uncertainty and a lot of the impacts, you know, $2 million is certainly reasonable and very, you know, we're in pretty good shape from that perspective. So with that, just quickly on the next steps, I talked about it, and I won't go through this slide too much in depth, but we did start the cost of service study. We had the workshop last board meeting, really got us off to a great start. We anticipate being back to you multiple times over the next 6 months, with you ultimately adopting rates next June for 2024. So this is really going to be the foundation going forward on our rates for both water and wastewater. Part of that is entwined is our long-term financial plan. As we've updated and finalized our model, we are working on just fine-tuning it right now. When we present this to the board later this year, this will include not just our current fiscal year as far as the performance that we anticipate through June 30th, but will also include the new budget. And then based on the cost of service, we should be able to show you what our long-term financial plan looks like going out 5 and 10 years. And then just quickly, I know we're entering in the second part of the two-year budget. We have a lot of work over the next 12 months to get you to present a new budget to you June 23, 2023. So as I mentioned, the process really will start in December. We'll have several workshops in March and March through May, and then present you with a budget in June with new rates for water and wastewater. And with that, the recommendation today is approved the proposed budget adjustments to the operating and non-operating revenue and expense, capital improvement plan, and the operating fixed assets for 2023. And I'm available for any questions. And just one final note, just want to thank staff. This is really a team effort, not just for the finance staff, but across the board. I can't tell you how much time Matt Melendrez's staff has spent on looking at their budget, analyzing it, and, of course, Linnea's staff as well. And so they've done a fantastic job in presenting you with what we think is a reasonable adjustment to the 23 budget. So with that, I'm available for any questions.
Any questions on this item? Director Slauson.
I don't have any questions. Inflation is obviously a huge contributor to the revised project. But I think a correction is in order. I think you're supposed to be referring to it as Putin inflation or Putinflation. Otherwise, it looks bad. So I'd appreciate that.
Okay.
Just in passing.
Noted.
Any other questions? Director Record, any questions on this item?
No questions. Good report. Everything pretty much looks pretty good, especially on the revenue side. I'll move the recommendation.
Moved by Director Record, seconded by Director Slauson. Let's get a roll call vote, please.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Crona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Passes 5-0. Again, thank you on staff. Laura, before you go, why don't we take about a 5 or 6 minute break?
You didn't know I was a liberal.
Water ski Never. At this age.
All right, we could reconvene. I believe we are on item D this morning, which is Laura. Good morning. Is to adopt a proposed resolution amending EMWD's administrative code for provisions related to the compensation of rules of conduct, appointment of committees, and water shortage contingency plan. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning, President Pauly and directors. This item is a periodic request to the board for updates to EMWD's administrative code as situations evolve with district needs and operations. For today's updates, there are three areas that we will be addressing. Two relate to board protocols, which are rules of conduct and appointments to committees, which are recommended by our legal counsel, Steve O'Neill. And one relates to clarification of verbiage in our water shortage contingency plan, stages and enforcement. So I'm going to go ahead and get started. The first one really is just is relating to compensation. And this change is just something that we're incorporating into a committee section that we're creating, we're enhancing, which I'll go over shortly. The biggest area that we're renovating is rules of conduct. So our legal counsel, Steve O'Neill, recommended that we streamline this section to remove references to Robert's Rules of Order and simplify the admin code to make it less cumbersome. The transition is being done at many districts he works with because boards can operate using only a fraction of Robert's Rules of Order. This streamlines the rules and procedures, allowing for the board to have more flexibility. So the rules of conduct have outlined 6 new sections and removes the clause relating to conducting meetings in accordance with Robert's Rules of Order. So briefly, the new sections include general guidelines. So these rules of order are meant to be more informal and applied flexibility. It allows for directors to raise a point of order to the president, not requiring a second to the president. If the ruling of the president is not satisfactory to the director, then it may be appealed to the full board. A majority will then govern and determine the point of order. Next is obtaining the floor. It's very similar to what the board is doing today. Any director desiring to speak should address the president, and upon recognition may address the subject under discussion. Next are motions and secondary motions. Again, these are now written as handled today generally. Any director, including the president, may make a second motion, second a motion. Once the motion is stated by the president, it's open for discussion and debated by the board. Public will have the opportunity to comment. Then in most circumstances, a director will make a motion, another director seconds the motion, The president calls for the vote and requires a majority vote of the board. When it comes to secondary motions, ordinarily one motion can be considered at a time, and a motion must be disposed of before any other motion or business is considered, with a few exceptions. And these include motion to amend, motion to table, motion to postpone, motion to revert to committee, motion to close debate and vote unanimously immediately, and motion to adjourn. The fifth area is decorum, and this is standard language relating to behavior of all persons in attendance, allowing the president to take whatever actions are necessary to maintain order during board meetings. And lastly, amendment of rules of order. It allows the board to amend rules of order at its discretion at any meeting. So really, we are taking out the clause of the rules of order to make it more clear and specific. That was a lot to take in one section, so I wanted to stop here and just see if you had any questions on those six sections.
Any questions? Director Armstrong?
Yeah, I have a question on the procedure. It seems like the way I understood what was read and when I read it is that the motions are made and seconded and then a discussion occurs. But it seems like we do things kind of the opposite. There's a discussion, and then motions are made. Is this intended to reverse that?
It's intended to be in compliance with kind of the principles of Roberts, you know, because I think all of you are familiar with Roberts' Rules of Order. It's designed for a parliamentary system in the 19th century. It's really kind of awkward for application. And there's been a distillation of that with this, I don't know if you've heard of Rosenberg's rules. It's a judge from Northern California who tried to distill that. And this is yet another distillation. But both of those principles, approaches incorporate the principle of we're going to have discussion, let's move it, second it, and then have a discussion. And frankly, sometimes that happens with boards, sometimes it doesn't. But that appears to be the better practice and the more common practice, that motion, second, open for discussion. So it's incorporating that kind of old concept of now it's quote unquote on the table. It's before the body. So yeah, that would be, I guess, a slight change. Then I got to tell you, I don't keep score that way, so I'm not sure how often that happens and how often it doesn't. But
yeah.
Director Corona.
So when you say secondary motions, you're talking about substitute motions?
Yes.
Okay. And then, so the substitute motion. So you, what we would be doing is we would make the primary motion and a second, and then have discussion. And then after discussion, if someone wanted to make a substitute motion, you would do the substitute motion, have discussion on that, then vote on the substitute motion. If it passes, we're done. If it doesn't pass, we go back to the primary motion.
Yes.
Okay. That was my question.
Great. Director Record, any questions on this item?
No questions. I mean, you don't really need them unless you have a board that chooses not to work together. Thankfully, we don't have that. So,
all right. Was that a motion to move the item?
I have two more
areas.
Oh, I'm
sorry.
I just wanted to stop on rules of conduct.
I apologize.
Okay. Quickly, a couple other areas. One relates to appointment to committees. This really, we retitled the title because now we're going to include both internal and external committees. And really, these procedures are what we're doing today. You know, we have the board. The board will develop committees as needed, both internal and external. Annually in December, we send out a list of the current committees to the board and ask for any input on or interest. The information is compiled. It goes back to the executive committee. The executive committee will review and make recommendations, and then we bring it back to the board in January. So these are standard procedures. We're just, memorializing them in the admin code. Any questions on committees?
Yeah, I have a question. it said, excuse me, the board will develop committees to carry out the work and require compliance with Brown Act, but not all committees have to comply with the Brown Act, isn't that?
That's correct. For the Brown Act requires that a meeting be noticed, and then it becomes a definition of what constitutes a meeting, and there's a specific definition in the Brown Act. And for ad hoc committees, those are not considered to be meetings. And those are generally meetings that are of limited duration and limited subject matter. Kind of the classic ad hoc committee would be the committee for the Christmas party, for example. You meet in November, you have your party, and then the committee's no longer the ad hoc is no longer necessary. But for standing committees, they have Brown Act requirements.
Okay, so that's understood. Okay, with this, I suppose.
All right. And the last change relates to our water shortage contingency plan stages and enforcement. This is really just to clarify. We are already handling it this way, but we wanted to memorialize it in writing that stage four customers who are assigned a 0.5 evapotranspiration factor, all homes or businesses connected on or after June 15, 2015, will not have their outdoor water budgets decreased unless all outdoor watering is prohibited. So we wanted to just make sure that was clear in the admin code. Any questions on that item?
Just to add on that particular item, that has been the practice during the last drought, but I know this was recently raised during one of our recent conversations. So we wanted to make sure, again, as Laura mentioned, we memorialize our practice.
Okay. And with that, we are recommending that you adopt a proposed resolution amending the admin code with these changes.
So moved.
Moved by Director Corona, second by Director Armstrong. I'd just like to note before I take a vote, I know Supervisor Janice Rutherford in San Bernardino County has been a big proponent statewide of moving public agencies to Rosenberg's rather than Robert's Rules of Order to modernize things. And so I will ask for a roll call vote on that and proudly vote.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Passes 5-2-0. Item E, adopt a proposed resolution amending EMWD's administrative code for compliance with Executive Order N7-22 related to commercial, industrial, and institutional ban for non-functional turf irrigation.
Good morning again. And as we reported at the last board meeting, on May 24th, the State Water Resources Control Board adopted emergency regulations to reduce water demand and increase water conservation efforts. And due to the timing of that emergency regulation and the process of our last admin codes, we weren't able to combine the two. So this is an additional request, a consideration to adopt a resolution amending the code to comply with those emergency requirements. As we reported at the last board meeting, EMWD is already in compliance with the majority of the elements of the emergency regulation, with the exception of prohibiting irrigation for non-functional turf for our CII customers. What we are requesting today is to adopt a resolution that amends the admin code to Article 6, water conservation, to add the provision prohibiting irrigation of CII non-functional turf with potable water. The admin code modifications do include the exceptions that were defined in the emergency regulation, which includes areas being irrigated to maintain tree health and other non-perennial or perennial non-turf plants, as well as warm season sod and areas being recycled with, being irrigated with recycled water. Staff is currently working on an implementation and enforcement plan. This is really the first step in that plan in order to comply with the regulations. And with that, I'll take any questions.
Any questions? Director Record, any questions on this item?
No question.
Would you like to move the item?
Sure.
Moved by Director Record. Second by Director Corona. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And that passes 5-2-0. We will move on to item F, which is to approve an authorized water supply assessment for the town center at Moreno Valley. Gordon, good morning, sir.
And just a point of clarification, President Pauly and members of the board, this presentation is actually going to cover items F, G, and H.
Very good.
So we'll do all three water supply assessments at once.
Okay.
So with that, So just a quick reminder, so water supply assessments, we prepare those in, to comply with SB 610 and 221. The gist of that is basically land use agencies during the CEQA process can request an assessment from a water supply agency when a project exceeds certain size thresholds that are documented on the right side of this slide, and it's just a document that basically explains whether we expect that our projected water supplies will be sufficient to meet a project's proposed demands. So, jumping right into it, the first project that we have a WSA for, this was requested by the city of Moreno Valley. The project is the town center at Moreno Valley. The developer is the Lewis Group of Companies. This is a 60-acre site on the corner of Alessandro and Nason Street, and it's primarily going to be very high-density residential dwelling units with some commercial land use, and there's also a park that's proposed for this site. In our 2020 urban water management plan, the land use that we assumed for these parcels was all medium density residential. So this proposed project does represent an increase in projected demands due to the inclusion of the very high density residential. So we're going from an estimate of about 134 acre feet annually to just over 300 acre feet annually. The next project that we're bringing for your consideration is the redevelopment of the Moreno Valley Mall. And so this is going to cover most, but not all, of the mall there. I believe it's the Macy's building and the JCPenney building that's going to redeveloped, but the rest of the mall is going to get updated, and they're going to be putting in over 1,600 very high-density residential dwelling units, some hotels, and then they will be retaining some commercial retail space as well. The developer for this is the Moreno Valley Mall Holdings, and they're working with Hanna Partners, and the agency that requested this was also the city of Moreno Valley. In our 2020 urban water management plan, the land use that we considered was all commercial retail based on the existing mall. And so with the inclusion of, again, very high-density residential dwelling units, we are seeing a pretty significant increase in projected demands from this site, going from about 150 acre feet annually to just under 700 acre feet annually. So this is a pretty sizable redevelopment. The final project is called The Terraces. This is down near the Golden Triangle area, just to the east of the 15 freeway, it's north of Murrieta Hot Springs Road. And so the developer for this is Graystar, and it's a 37-acre site, and they're, again, proposing up to 900 very high-density residential dwelling units. In the 2020 Urban Water Management Plan, we had anticipated that these parcels would be developed for commercial land uses. So this, again, also is going to be an intensification in terms of the demands that we had projected. So in total, what this ends up being for these three projects is... For the parcels that we considered in the urban water management plan, we had anticipated it to be just under 400 acre feet annually. Combined, these project demands are now projecting to be just under 1,300 acre feet annually. So it's an increase of over 900 acre feet per year. When we look at this in totality with the other projects that we have done water supply assessments for, we did have a bit of a buffer, just under 400 acre feet. And so that cumulatively then brings it down to just about 500 acre feet. Having said that, this is something that we planned for. We anticipated that, you know, we had been seeing ongoing densification within our service area. So in our 2020 urban water management plan, we included a buffer to account for situations just like this. And so that buffer, basically how we calculated that was we assumed that development... that water use from new development and our existing customers would be at a higher intensity than what we're seeing in terms of our actual per capita use. So that turned out to be about 15% buffer that we put into our projections. And so putting that into volumetric terms, this graph here shows a comparison of the green bars, which are the projected demands at current levels of water use efficiency. The blue line across the top are the projections that we have in our urban water management plan. So you can see that there's a pretty significant gap between the top of the green bars and the blue line. The cumulative impact of the water supply assessments, that 500 acre feet per year, is represented by a light blue bar on top of the green bars. So you can see that 500-ish acre feet is well within the margin that we had planned for in terms of densification over the next couple of years. And as a reminder, we do update our urban water management plans every 5 years, and these updated land uses would be considered when we make that next update. Just a final couple slides. Metropolitan also is required to complete an urban water management plan, and the results of their analysis to meet the water code requirements show that they have surplus capacity both under normal years and under five-year drought hydrologies. And so based on that information, our recommendation is to approve and authorize the water supply assessments for all three of these projects, given that we have the buffer in our urban water management plan projections. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Question, Director Slauson.
I'm fine with them. I just have one question. You said that we update them every 5 years, water supply assessments?
Urban water management plan, we update every 5 years.
Okay, but what about, I got that now. Thank you. But what about water supply assessments? Do they have a shelf life?
Yes, they do. We ask that they keep us updated, in 3 year intervals so that we have the most updated information when we get to that 5 year cycle for the urban water management plan.
Okay, but they don't expire.
Not exactly.
Director Slauson, as long as the development does not change, as long as the proposed land use and development does not change, and we have approved a water supply assessment that we can serve them, then you are correct, it does not expire. Okay. If at some point in time they change, they have to come back to us.
Yes.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Director Armstrong.
Yeah. So I know we kind of touched on this a little bit, a meeting before or two, but there, as the drought progresses, you get more and more questions about how do we not have enough water for our existing customers, but we can continue to add new developments and high-density developments. And I think one of the answers is what you have in here in that slide that shows that Metropolitan is showing that there's the water supply to do that. So I think that's really helpful. But I do have a question on development in our water shortage contingency plan. Mm-hmm. Is there a point in there that development could be halted, or is that it's not like in the plan anywhere or...
Yeah. Director Armstrong, that is not in the plan.
Okay.
We can share with you the details of the various tiers of the plan and what that really entails. But the plan itself does not necessarily halt consideration or accommodation of growth.
Right.
And as we know, there's various types of growth, not just commercial, residential, but there's other demands within the service area. To your point, this... question has come up, especially over the last few months, and you know our position has been that new development and growth is subject to much more stringent water use efficiencies. For that reason, we have seen collectively our GCPD being reduced significantly over the last 20 years. I think one of the data points we've shared with this board is over the last 20 years, our population has more than doubled. But yet our reliance on imported supplies from Metropolitan has in fact reduced. It is because of all the programs. It is because of our recycled water program to help offset. But I also want to point out that development allows us to make investments in additional water supplies locally, such as our desalination program, where we're bringing on another 5.5 million gallons per day of new supplies for our region. Without those connection fees, without that revenue stream, we're not able to invest in those local supplies. So it's all the things above. It's the recycled water program. It's the new sources of water locally. It's the fact that the GCPD has been driven primarily because of the higher water use efficiency required on new development. I think there's not one particular thing. It's the aggregate of all those things that we do.
Yeah, thanks.
Director Record, any questions on this item?
No questions, but I will make a comment. I have heard pretty directly from the state administration that one of the biggest concerns they have about the current drought that we're in and how we manage it is the impact on new housing, because housing is such an issue in California. It's so short. So anyway, I think that, you know, hopefully the drought doesn't last forever, and nobody's done as much as we have, I don't believe, to manage it and utilize local resources and still more in the work. So I think we're in good shape. I have no problem approving these.
Very good. Thank you. I will now look for a combined motion for items F, G, and H. Moved by Director Slauson.
Second.
Second by Director Armstrong. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Cronin?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
All three pass 5-0. Gordon, thank you for a great presentation this morning. We will now move on to our informational items. Mr. Adams, for the third time today, would you like to do the fiscal operating and capital highlights for the third quarter?
Yes. Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. Before I start my third presentation, I mentioned earlier about the team, and the board may recall back in April, the board approved a reorganization within the finance department. This did create an opportunity, a finance manager over budget. We did actually have an internal promotion. She's back there smiling with the waving. She didn't know I was going to introduce her. Her name's Donna Kaminke. She has been with the district for 7 years. Talk about the mid-year update and this report. She does the heavy lift. I get to come up here and present and look good and take all the credit. So with that, move forward with my presentation. I'll make this brief. Just jump right straight into the consolidated. Overall, I mentioned earlier, revenues, especially on the services, are above budget. Expenses, 6.7 below budget. The first box, the non-operating property taxes, above budget, a couple million currently. Connection fees, significantly above budget. I mentioned the conservative numbers that we project on both EDUs and EMSs, and that's just based really on that longer trend. So that revenue is significantly up. Interest earnings, again, up above budget because of the way rates have increased over the past year related to what our projections were last spring. And then other income and grants, going back to the reinstitution of the late fees, that has also increased revenues. As you can see on operating expenses, overall 1.1%, so really tight, over budget a little bit, but that's because of the increase in purchased water, chemicals, energy, whatnot, and then on non-operating expenses, well below. Other commitments, the pension payment into the trust, that $15 million occurred, and so really that additional $4 million was expensed through labor. So overall, certainly in a great position, less use of reserves to fund our capital commitments at this point. So overall, really good shape for the district. On the water side, mentioned increased demand, mainly from just the higher growth, the EDU or the EMS connections, domestic water sales, $7.5 million above, over 6%. And that's not just on the sales volumetric, but also the additional connections. And then on ag, we sell water through to Lake Hemet, and certainly they have had a higher demand than prior year. And then purchased water, with the additional sales, we've had a higher cost on purchased water. But still, when you look at the overall revenue, a smaller percentage because of the increased number. So just quickly, again, overall water service, 8.5% above budget. You can see domestic water is 5%, but the domestic demand, which is that fixed charge, is 10% above what we were budgeting. And then again, on operating costs, purchase water, 5.7% higher, and then energy, that 27%. And we talked about the increases that we've seen on energy. So overall, operating costs, 1.7% above budget. Revenues 8.5. So certainly, even with the additional sales, we have the offsetting expenses. So still good shape for the water service. Wastewater, flows are higher with the additional growth. Overall, wastewater is really tight from both sides, both the revenue side and the expense side. You can see that on the revenue side, 2.1% above and just barely below budget. So fixed costs there, and just really a tight budget from a planning side, if you think about just the last year and how costs have increased, overall pretty good. Again, energy expense, we've seen significant increases, and so that is over budget. Again, there's the 2.1% overall on the revenue side above budget, and then the 0.8% under budget. And this is through 9 months. So certainly this was very similar at the six-month point. It will continue, I would assume, for the next quarter. So recycled water, I mentioned last year that we actually had almost 34,000 acre-feet sold. Certainly the fourth quarter is one of our higher quarters as far as sales. Last year at this time, we were trending right around 25,000. So certainly higher at this point than we were, and that's at 13.5% above prior year. Revenue is higher. A lot of that is based on the average cost, or actually the average revenue for acre feet sold, mainly because of some of the other customers, retrofit and whatnot. Overall operating costs, mainly because of energy, is higher. And so that is also over budget, but overall the net margin is in positive. So here's the highlight, recycled water, 20% over revenue, operating costs 6.8, as far as expense over budget, again, energy, you can see that number almost 80% higher than what we budgeted, and that is an adjustment that was made as part of the 22-23 budget. For general admin or general and administrative, certainly we have vacancies that have created some savings overall, just about $2.2 million under budget. A lot of that is the labor, but you can see some other areas, software licensing is under budget. And then we also did have the payment to CalPERS, which also skews that number a little bit. Overall, with some of the adjustments, delays, we are, reserves have continued to increase to help support. Certainly the connection fees had an impact there as we receive higher revenue than anticipated. Those reserves, of course, will be spent as our capital program does some of those expansion projects. This goes back to the EDUs. What's the red is what we budget. That is our conservative. And that's sort of what we've been using over the last 5 years, about 3,000 EDUs a year. The blue is what happened last year, so a total of 47. We currently are trending higher. I did see the May numbers recently, certainly a decline from April, but still trending in a very, still going up. in that aspect, certainly with rising interest rates, the other inflationary, we would anticipate to see some declines over the next 6 months. And then for capital, I mentioned it, or we talked about capital. Linnea had a highlight of the 21-22 budget. To date, we're at 64% funded or spent. We've received about 60% of the external funding. This year, we anticipate about $19 million in external funding to support the program, meaning that about $87 million is out of pocket. So that's on the $106 million overall capital budget. So, certainly with some of the delays, usually that number's a little higher on how much we spent to date, but I know that they're certainly on pace to try to spend the full 100% by the end of the year. Operating fixed assets, I mentioned this earlier, certainly in certain delays, especially like vehicles, we don't have those expenses as high as we had budgeted, but anticipate those expenses in next year. So it just shows you that at this point in time, we're about 44% spent on OFA. And just really the summary conclusion, certainly revenues are higher, operating expenses a little higher than, overall on the operating side. Both water, wastewater, and recycle are in good shape. Connection fees are higher, significantly higher than budget. But again, those are restricted revenues to support the capital expansion program. And then almost $12 million in grants so far. And I know Linnea mentioned the reduction for next year, but I think our staff does a really good job in identifying additional funding, and I would expect that number to increase. So overall, within target, I would expect the fourth quarter to perform very similar. So with that, I'm available for any questions.
Any questions? Nope. Director Record, any questions on this item?
No questions. Good report.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it. Excellent report on that.
We will now go to item B, which is to update on a resumption of delinquency process and collection of past due customer payments for the fiscal year 22-23. Good morning, Charles.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. Appreciate this opportunity for Chrissy and I to provide you with this update. So we'll go ahead and get right into it. Some of this information you heard this morning by way of the general manager's update. So by way of background, the executive order restricting water shutoffs expired at the end of last year. And following that, we resumed the delinquency processes, specifically delivery of door hangers or final notices. This is a requirement of Senate Bill 998, which that process resumed on March 14th. And the resumption of non-payment disconnects resumed on March 21st. It's also important to note that during that almost two-year time frame of the moratorium, the district did not perform any non-payment turnoffs during that time. So what has transpired since resuming these processes? Let's take a look at door hangers first. As I mentioned, this is a requirement to deliver these door hangers of Senate Bill 998. And to date, or at the time we prepared the data, which was mid-May, staff had delivered almost 7,500 door hangers to delinquent customers with an average amount past due of about 1,050. 72% of customers receiving these door hangers have taken action, or more specifically, 5,353 customers. And taking action here means that they've made a payment or they've reached out to us to set up payment arrangements, and the payments received at the time was just over $1.4 million. 5 days later, for those not taking action, five business days to be correct, those not taking action, services disconnected for non-payment. So as I mentioned, disconnects do occur to those not taking action, and to date, just under 1,400 customers had been disconnected due to non-payment. And when we took a closer look at those accounts, 36 had disconnects multiple times in that time frame. And what's interesting, we looked at this data late last week, and that number is up to 82. So as we've shared with the board in the past, the remote shutoff meters, these are prime candidates for that meter because it saves the district two truck rolls, a truck roll to disconnect the customer, and then once they make a payment, another truck roll to reconnect. With these meters, we can actually perform those functions in the office by the push of a button. 75% of customers are reconnected within 24 hours, as you can see in the table there. And more specifically, almost 60% are reconnected on the same day. So what that's telling us is that this process does prompt customers to take action. And again, the action is payments or payment arrangements. So we pride ourselves in, you know, being neighborly and offering superior customer service. And one way we do that is by directing customers to the various assistance programs that are out there. And this morning you heard Mr. Mowat talk about the CWAP program. So just to reiterate, in December, staff or the district received $3.69 million for water arrearages. And I believe a week and a half ago, we received a check for $1.79 for wastewater arrearages. Both of those credits have been applied to customer accounts, and notifications have gone out to those customers letting them know that those credits were applied to their accounts, respectively. Some other programs that have been really successful, one that you all are very familiar with, is the Help to Others program, which is a district-funded program. Initially, the program offered a 100 credit to qualifying customers. In July of last year, the board amended that to $200 to qualifying customers. Another program that has really been successful is the United Lift program. This program is geared towards renters and landlords that have experienced hardship brought on by the ongoing pandemic. And so these programs combined have assisted 1,736 EMWD customers with payments of just over $800,000 going towards their water bills that are past due. And as the note there mentions, you know, targeted communication do increase participation. So if I draw your attention to the graph on the bottom there, right before the end of the moratorium, we worked with Public and Government Affairs to really send out communication to customers. And you'll see those first 3 months of 2022, there was a steep increase in participation So we continue to do that and direct customers to the various programs that are available, and as you can see, they do respond. Customer payment activity. We prepared this slide in response to Director Slauson. I believe several board meetings ago you had asked a question, and sir, I believe your question was, since resuming these delinquency processes, how many customers that were passed do you have made a payment in full? So we took a look at the data, and we identified just over 7,500 customers that were past due prior to resuming the delinquency process. Almost 2,500 made a payment in full, bringing the account to a zero balance. Now, there's a little bit of a combination happening here. You know, we saw a little bit of payment assistance funds going to those customers, dropping their balance to something that's more manageable, and then they ended up paying the difference. And in some cases, some customers just went ahead and made the full payment of what was past due. 2,300 customers are currently on a payment plan. So again, what that looks like is the customer will reach out to us, make an initial payment, and the remaining will amortize that over several months. And so long as they maintain those payment arrangements, the account would not be turned off for non-payment. The difference, 2,700 customers remain past due. And when we take a closer look at that, there's two key drivers to this. One is broken payment arrangements. So as I mentioned, so long as they keep those payment arrangements, they're good to go. And what we're finding is some customers will make one, two, or three payments, and then they'll break on the fourth payment, so then that kind of restarts that process. The other segment of customers are paying the minimum amount to avoid a disconnect. So what that looks like is, if you remember the timeline, due to one of the provisions of Senate Bill 998, it extended that time frame. So for Eastern customers, from the time we mail a bill out to when we can turn off a customer, it's almost 3 months. It's 85 days. It's almost 3 months. And in that time frame, a customer could get two or three bills. So what we're finding is that the customers are paying the oldest bill that's closest to the disconnect and maintaining that cadence as they move along. So those are customers that we'll continue to communicate with. We'll reach out to them, send them targeted messaging to ensure that they're fully aware of the various programs, as well as the intent to set up payment arrangements to avoid all of this activity. So really, all of this activity, as I mentioned, is to address one metric that Chrissy and I and Dan and others, we look at on a daily basis, which is account aging. And just a reminder, account aging are bills that are 60 or more days past due. And as you heard this morning from General Manager Mawad, when we started the year, we were at $9.6 million. And currently, it's right about $3.6 million. So that's a $6 million decrease since the start of the year. And since resumption of this delinquency process, it's over $2 million. So, we still have a long ways to go. Pre-pandemic, we were right about $500,000, $600,000. Still have a ways to go, but I think this is trending in the right direction, and all of these efforts are definitely driving this down. So we'll keep on the full court press, and we'll keep updating y'all as we move along. So before I pass this on to Chrissy, I'd like to take a pause and see if there are any questions regarding anything that I just presented to y'all.
Any questions? And I know I'll make a quick note. I know Director Record had to leave us at 11:30, so... With that, no questions. Why don't we go into the property tax?
Yep.
Good morning.
Good morning. How's everyone? So by way of background, we submit annually to property tax every year as an organization. We will notify customers prior to doing so. The property tax submission started again last year as far as for delinquent charges for unpaid accounts. It requires a board action that's similar to sewer-only accounts. In 2021, we submitted 647 active and closed customer accounts that were owner-occupied. So that's an important distinction. And we submitted approximately 808,000 in doing so. There are three different scenarios that customers will experience with the resumption of the delinquency process. The first one, which is our preference, is that a customer submits a payment, they keep their account current, and they never are at risk of shutoff. The second one is where a customer can call us to set up payment arrangements, they prevent a shutoff by doing so, and if they maintain those payment arrangements, They are not at risk of shutoff. And the third one is that a customer is shut off for nonpayment. So we have two paths from this point. We can either engage with them and set up a payment arrangement by them making an initial payment, or the account will go through the process of being closed for nonpayment, and then it follows the normal collection process. And speaking of the third path for customers, when an account closes, we have two different types of treatment. For property owners, if the account closes and there's an unpaid balance, if it's an owner-occupied property, we will file a lien with the county, and if the balance is 60 days owing and over $500 due, we will then submit it to the property tax rolls with Riverside County. If it's a tenant balance that's left unpaid after the account is closed, we do submit it to our secondary collections IC system. And in the last submission that we made to the Riverside County property tax rolls, we had about an 86% return on what we submitted. So just to let you guys know about that. This slide talks about the regional agency's approach to using the property tax rolls to submit delinquent balances. So as you can see, you know, some agencies only submit it, as we did in the past, for sewer-only accounts. But some agencies like Rancho and Coachella actually submit owner and tenant balances, both active and inactive, on any balances owed that are over 60 days owing. Currently, we are using property tax for closed owner accounts and sewer-only accounts. And then we are collecting Social Security numbers for potential franchise tax board submission in the future. This is an established practice with Rancho and Coachella. They've been doing this for many years. And so their customers are accustomed to having their active balances for both owners and tenants submitted. Our recommendations for 2022 and 2023 is proceed with the property tax process, but limit it to collecting unpaid debt on closed owner-occupied accounts only beginning in July of 2022. And the justification for this is we all know that 2020 and 2021 were very interesting years, and we took action last year on submitting active accounts in order to prompt payments from customers that we really didn't have any leverage in getting because we didn't have the delinquency process restarted. As Charles mentioned, the door hanger and disconnect process is working. You know, we are seeing balances be decreased by that process. And customers are making more regular payments, and they are engaging with us for the first time in almost 2 years to make payment arrangements on their account. As you saw, account aging is incrementally improving. And what we would really like to do is dig into this process and allow us time to develop strategic customer communications to notify owners that their balances will potentially, they may become responsible for tenant balances left at the property that they own. During the admin committee meeting, we were asked if we had a legal right to submit tenant balances and make on the owner's property tax rolls. And we did find language in the California Water Code that does advise that if an unpaid debt is left at a parcel, it does have the right to be submitted to county property tax. And we also have it written in our admin code specifically, in the event a tenant balance remains unpaid, the property owner shall become responsible for that unpaid balance. And with that, any questions? I'd be happy to answer them.
I had a question. So if I am a landlord mm-hmm. and my tenant has said I'm moving out, mm-hmm. I don't know if they paid their water bill or not. Is that something I, as the landlord, could call in and get that current billing information, or is that private to the person paying the bill?
We would be able to disclose the current balance on the account.
Okay, so I could get that or take it out of the deposit or something, so I, as the property owner, don't get stuck with that getting on my property taxes eventually, correct?
Correct.
Okay. No, thank you for that. So any other questions?
Or you could write a check.
Well, I could do that, too. Any other questions on this? Okay, thank you so much. Appreciate it very much. All right. And again, Charles and company do appreciate the you guys have done a great job during all of this. There's been a lot of moving parts to billing and collections over the last 2 years, and I just can't say enough good things about the entire department for doing that. So, all right, with that, we will move on to item 7, which is to receive and file various reports. I will make a motion to pass that.
Second.
Second by Director Corona. May I please get a roll call vote?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And that passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning. I'm going to lower this so you can hear me.
Review.
Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. Today I have one event for your consideration. The Special District Association of Riverside County is going to be conducting their July 29th, which is a Friday, meeting here in EMWD's boardroom. Their keynote speaker is Adele Hodge-Kali, the GM of Western Municipal Water or Metropolitan Water District. The information flyer for that is located at the back of your packet. On page 2 is the board member master calendar schedule. Please review that and let me know if there's any changes or corrections or additions. And then beginning on page 3 is the conference and event schedule with the participants. This Friday we have the Water Task Force Zoom discussion series, Tomorrow's Solutions Today. So that'll be this Friday, June 17th at 7:30. Followed by next Thursday is the Paris 2 Desalter ribbon cutting ceremony that General Manager Mawad mentioned earlier. And then in the evening at 6:30 is the WRCOG General Assembly at Pechanga Resort. So also on the list is in August we have 2 water conferences with the BIA, Southern California Water, and Urban Water Institute that are available. Continuing on page 3 is the board meeting and board committee meetings. They're all scheduled on schedule for the next 3 months. And then lastly on page 4 are the interagency meetings in August, which are currently on schedule. And then just a reminder that the offices will be closed on Monday, July 4th, for Independence Day. So, any questions?
Any questions for Jennifer? All right. Thank you so much. We will go to Director's Activities Reports. Start with Director Armstrong.
We have 2 meetings to report on. The first one was the Retirement Trust Committee, and this was our first meeting since we made our initial deposit into the trust. I think the deposit was made sometime around the end of February, and that was about $15 million. And so we looked at the performance of that for the first 2 months, and it's not a long enough period of time to really see how it's performing, and certainly bad times right now in the market to be making a deposit, but still doing well. And then the staff also, I think, did a really great job working with CalPERS to now move the OPEB funds from CalPERS into our trust. And I'm not sure when that's going to...
It happened this week.
It happened this week. So that's close to $120 million or so that was moved into our trust. So that's a really big accomplishment by staff. And staff is also developing a funding policy on the retirement trust that will come back to the board in the near term. And then the other meeting was the Elsinore Valley joint meeting, and talked about water supplies, talked about metropolitan issues. And the one thing I thought was really interesting from that was, I think, Joe, you mentioned that, I'm not sure who mentioned it, but of the 430-something water districts that should be complying with moving down into the level 2 of their water shortage contingency plan, only about half of them have done that so far. And here at Eastern, we're at level 3. So again, we're kind of leading the way on this with our efforts, but that was a good meeting.
All right, very good. Thank you so much, Director Corona.
Okay, yes. I did not attend the EMWD Rancho Water Ad Hoc Committee. The Rancho California Water District board meeting, pretty standard meeting. I reported a little bit on the Southern Wine Country announcements regarding the money that was becoming available, and the Rancho Board was very thankful for Eastern's help in protecting the underground basin, and that's all I have.
All right, very good. I attended the Retirement Trust Committee, which Director Armstrong is chairing, and reported on, and Again, the fact that I kudos to staff that something that we came up with an idea 18 months ago, I think, and have actually haven't implemented is amazing to me, and I think it's in good hands, and so kudos to that. WRCOG Executive Committee, the committee made a recommendation which will be voted on at the General Assembly next week, that the next chair of WRCOG will be Councilman Crystal Ruiz from our service area in San Jacinto. Had my usual great meeting with our general manager to discuss various upcoming topics before the board and just general Eastern items, and I was unable to attend the IE Works Leadership Committee meeting. As we noted, Director Record has had to leave us, so Director Slauson.
Yes, I had one meeting. I attended SAPA this last Tuesday. We approved entering into a partnership agreement, with the Inland Empire Resource Conservation District for Arundel removal in the Santa Ana River, applying for a disadvantaged community grant, and issuing requests for proposals for the weather modification program.
That's it. All right, very good. Do you have any director's comments or future agenda items?
No, I'd like to recognize my son in the back, Luke Slauson. Could you please stand up?
I was going to say.
He knows my tricks. He's not falling for it.
Okay. I hope he learned some stuff today attending our meeting, and good to meet you. I would just like to say, following up on our public hearing today, I think it would be interesting for the whole board to maybe get an education on what our policies is for discharging into our system. So sometime, Joe, maybe in the upcoming months, we could maybe have a presentation on that. And
absolutely. We will go ahead and put that information together for the board. Absolutely.
You know, let's see if there's maybe other policy items or something that we need to take. Anyway, it's very interesting. Mr. Legal Counsel, I understand we have no need for closed session today. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Very good. With that, we will adjourn until Wednesday, July 6th at 9 o'clock. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.